From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host, Mike Dempsey.
All right, welcome aboard Jaguars Today on this Tuesday morning. Mike Dempsey, you already heard from Barry Milligan momentarily ago. Tyler Devitt in the fold today, as well as Fat Tony's got the week off. Glad you're with us as Jaguars Today kicks off this morning on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. Barry Milligan, look, I assume that everybody knows exactly who you are, knows where you've been, what you've done, heard about you, the notorious BM. Let's give them a little bit of a capsule history of you. Certainly, we mentioned Sunshine Network. You used to cover everything
back
in the day,
right?
In a bad way. I mean, I know you called yourself the King of Trash laughingly.
And named that by David Lamb.
Oh, was it Lamb who gave you the name?
He is.
And that's basically because there was not a sport you would not broadcast on Sunshine Network. Your range
that
went
is correct.
From, you know, college basketball to, you know, minor league volleyball, it seems.
I did a lot of women's sports. The best summer of my life, actually, was doing play-by-play for the Coors Light Beach Volleyball Series.
Oh.
We went to a different resort in Florida for 11 straight weekends.
And watched women play beach volleyball.
Guys and girls.
Oh, guys were playing as well.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well.
Yeah.
You know, wasn't a perfect job, but.
It was pretty good.
It was pretty cool.
Half of it was awesome.
Sounded like it was a really nice setup for you right there.
And, and our sideline reporter, I've actually been fortunate enough to work with some really great people who have done much greater things than I after a period of time. Gabby Reese was our courtside reporter.
There you go.
For the beach volleyball series, yes. And most recently, I guess, when I worked with Tom Block over in Tallahassee for the Florida Sports News show, Aaron Andrews was one of our reporters.
There you go.
Yeah, and got to know Aaron very well, and I'm really, really just thrilled to death at the success she's had. She's worked very hard.
It was kind of a stepping stone job. It was funny who you know and who you've worked with over the years and where they pop up.
Absolutely. Well, Aaron's dad, she was weaned in the television business. Her father was a general manager of a television station in the Tampa St. Pete area where she grew up. So she literally grew up around the television business and went on to do and still is doing great things.
And longtime voice of JU Athletics.
I did.
As well.
I had two stints at JU and really I worked with some amazing people over there. Most recently, Alan Verlander, who is with the Jack Sports Council now, the executive director, was my boss, the athletic director at the time. And Joel Lamp, who was my road dog. Can you imagine Joel Lamp and I sharing a room together? I mean, for the hundreds of nights that we did on the road for several years, and we really had a lot of fun. And you know, I still one of my obviously all time favorite moments is the Ben Smith 3-point shot in the NIT.
Sure.
When we went out and beat Arizona State in the first round of the NIT, sitting alongside Artis Gilmore. That was really, really a great moment.
No doubt about it. And, you know, a long time either Jaguar reporter / observer. Certainly you've been to more than your share of Jaguar games over the years.
Yeah.
Covered them both from just as a kind of a fan standpoint and a media standpoint. So well-versed in the history and tradition and everything it's brought us to today.
It has been a lot of fun. And actually, speaking of David Lamb, I used to produce David's television show when he did the Lamb at Large show for Sunshine Network back in the old days. And we actually, I think it might have been his third or fourth day in Jacksonville. We were the first people, David and I, to go out to Hidden Hills and take Dan Edwards to tee it up when he first got here. So that was
a lot of
fun. And you talk about great guys. Dan Edwards is one of the great guys ever, maybe.
People hear his name, but they probably don't.
Vice President of Communications, the Jaguars.
Right, and works very directly with Shad Khan now, does a lot of stuff with him. And,
right.
and just been anything having to do with the media over the years, Dan Edwards is the guy who basically was your liaison between the team and the media at large.
And I actually, I don't even know, things get a little blurry these days in my memory, if you can imagine that, but there were, I think, 3 years. I actually did the press box PA for the Jaguars. So I truly was there calling every single play. And you talk about, I mean, that's fairly intense, you know, when you call in down and distance and everything
right,
for every
box,
single play.
Right. And we mock you unmercifully when you screw up anything.
Right? Correct.
Mispronounce a guy's name with 15 syllables in
no
it.
Question.
Doesn't matter. No quarter given on any of that
no
stuff.
There's no chance I could ever do that anymore.
No. Because, well, everyone gets slayed. Whoever's in the job, we don't even really, you don't, it, you know, it's kind of like an offensive lineman, right? You don't notice them until they screw up.
Right.
It's a thankless position.
Yes, it is.
But nonetheless, it's part of the fabric of the sports landscape here on the First Coast. I know you've been observing what's been going on, just general, because we've got 2 hours to get into it today, and we'll take calls. We'll throw out the question today here in a minute. Where are you in terms of your enthusiasm level for this football team, and how long has it been since that level is where it is right now?
Well, obviously, maybe not so obviously, but I am a huge fan. I've love the organization there since, you know, day one. I took my nephew to the very first Jaguars game, and we spent an inordinate amount of money on things that I still have quite a few of, by the way. I still have an inaugural season Jaguars polo shirt that I will never get rid of. Never,
nice.
Ever. Right. And it's awesome. I love that kind of stuff. But to answer your specific question, though, my enthusiasm level now is significantly higher than it's been, you know, because, and that comes with raised expectations, like everyone
sure.
does. You know, I think what the team has done in the offseason was brilliant. I think they're, you know, whether it's luck or the posturing or whatever, to be able to get the draft picks they did when they got them, I thought everything played out very, very well. I'm a believer in karma. And I'm hoping that the Jags are due, because we've lived through some tough times and the fans have been just incredible. This fan base is absolutely incredible. And as much as I want the success for the organization and the city, and, you know, because everybody feels good when they're playing well and they're winning, I would love to see this team win just for the fan base, because this fan base has really been, in my estimation, just remarkable.
Yeah, especially the ones that have shown up year after year after year through the bad times, put up not only with poor play on the field, poor results, leaving disappointed on Sunday
right.
afternoon, but just kind of being the butt of the NFL joke in a lot of ways, you know, and not at their own fault, but at their expense, because they support the team that's in their backyard and they love that team. And now, hopefully, it looks like brighter things on the horizon in the near future.
Yeah, we sure hope so. And I'll tell you, it's such an effort. For those of you who go every week and tailgate, I mean, you know what it means to get up on, you know, on a Sunday morning at 7:30 or 8 o'clock and pack the vehicle and do everything you need to do and go to the stadium and set up shop and do all of that stuff and go to, I mean, it's like another work day. I mean, it isn't, but, you know, I mean, at one time, obviously, when I was a member of the media, and, you know, it's so much easier because you have an easy place to park. You take an elevator to your seat.
Sure.
You're in an air conditioned box.
We're spoiled.
You're fed, you know, and to have to be a fan, it's tough. I mean, especially when you're a real dedicated fan and you're going through that whole tailgate kind of experience, you know, for those 10 weeks,
right.
Not all Sundays, but those 10 weeks when you're doing that. I mean, I have just unbelievable respect for the people that do that and have done that. And again, like you were saying, to the extent to which those people have done it over the years, it's amazing.
All right. Well, we can get into every aspect of Jaguar football today. As always, the phone lines are open to you, the Jaguar fan listening out there, at 641-1010. Also, the text line is wide open at 641-1010. It's driven by Duval Ford. The question of the day, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, is this: other than Blake Bortles, who I think we'd all agree is the most indispensable player on this football team, who are the three most indispensable Jaguars, simply guys they could not afford to lose for any significant amount of time? This is, I'm thinking, for 2016 only, not long term. Who, if you were to hear a guy suffered a season-ending injury, would you not want it to be? Right, who tops that list other than Blake Bortles? So we'll talk about that throughout the course of the show today. You can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL. Tyler, what are you, Bearfax, on the Twitter these days? What's your Twitter handle?
It's Barry Milligan 5.
Barry Milligan 5. All right, I do follow you. I just didn't have it at the top of mind right now. So you can throw Barry in the tweets if you'd like to as well. And the Facebook page, open for business as well. You know how to get on board. We'll get into every aspect of the Jags offseason with Barry Milligan. If you want to be on The program, all you have to do is pick up the phone and dial it up and say your piece. That's the way we do it. Mike Dempsey, Barry Milligan, Tyler Devitt here with you. It's Jaguars Today, just getting started on this Tuesday morning. Fat Tony, day two of vacation. This is 1010XL on 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, if you're wondering, and some apparently were, the answer is yes. When you used to call the arena, you would get the recorded voice of Barry Milligan.
That is correct.
Directing you. If you'd like to speak to a human being, press some button. Right. I don't know what it was.
And they kept that up there for a while. That was a great gig, by the way. I really enjoyed working in the arena. And
is that right?
Well, I'm a concert nut. I love live music. Maybe, I don't know. All right, not as much as sports, but it's
you're
close.
You're pretty, yeah, that is kind of your thing.
Yeah.
The whole concert
yeah.
scene.
And working for SMG at the arena was awesome.
I'm like a really big name concert guy for me. You know, like I didn't even see Pearl Jam, although that would have qualified for me. I saw The Who when they came through with Joan Jett.
Right.
And probably before that was the Eagles, the last one. I don't get to many mid-tier, you know what I mean? What
yeah,
I would consider
I
mid-tier concerts.
Right.
Save it for the all-time greats, yeah. man.
But, I tell you, well, and oh my goodness, what's happening with concert tickets have just gone nuts. I mean, you know, with the secondary markets now and everything, you know, with whether it's, you know, forget about Craigslist or StubHub. I mean, you can go to Vivid Seats and SeatGeek and all of these places. A friend of mine called me a couple days ago and said, you know, Bonnie Raitt's coming to the amphitheater in St. Augustine, which, by the way, is a fantastic venue.
It really is, right?
I love it.
They actually get some really good
acts
down there.
Great acts yeah. there. I mean, I've seen a lot of shows there in the last couple of years.
Is that going to continue after the new amphitheater is built at the stadium down at Everbank?
Well, I'll be a fan of whomever comes.
Right.
I'll be a big fan. I can't wait for that, by the way, because it's a lot closer to home. And you can Uber. I can't really Uber to the
Tyler,
amphitheater.
Man. Tyler's yeah. got your Uber. He'll come
That's
pick you
sweet.
Up.
Sweet. I like that.
He will hook you up.
I like that. But my buddy calls me and says, you know, Bonnie Raitt's coming in October. In October, right? So I go on all the sites. Two of the secondary sites don't even have seats. It's so sold out. Ticketmaster resale, even. No seats available. I'm looking at seats. What was about a $70 face value seat? $335.
Wow.
$335.
I'll go play Pebble Beach, thanks.
All due respect, yeah, I wouldn't pay $335 to go out to dinner with Bonnie Raitt.
Right.
I mean, much less go to her concert. But, yeah, it's gotten a little nutty. So I've gotten, honestly, to the point where as much as I do love it, I have to kind of pick my spots.
I guess so, man,
yeah.
at those kind of rates. But you're missed. After
I'm
all
not
those,
going. I'm not going to that. No
all
way.
All those years of cable TV, man. I know you've got
oh,
it socked
yeah,
away.
Yeah, I'm rolling.
All right, the question of the day, once again, three most indispensable Jags not named Blake Bortles. Got a lot of answers coming in already, and we'll get to that. We'll start debating some of the potential guys who could make that list here in a moment. 641-1010, the phone number. Interesting story just came out. At least we just noticed it in the last 15 minutes or so. This has happened in the past with the Dallas Cowboys, but their 2016 draft board, a photo of it. Now, clearly the draft has gone by, but it's leaked out on the internet now. And why is this important? Well, it's fascinating to me to see how a team actually ranks players, Barry, right? Because,
right.
you know, there are 32, or in this case 31 this year, picks in the first round, but most teams will not grade 30-plus players as first-round values. So what happens is, if you're picking in the top half of the round, maybe you only have 15 or 20 of them, oh, you know you're going to get a first-round value. That's when you see teams in the 20s start to trade out of round one. They say, you know what, we grade this guy as a middle second rounder. We're not going to pay that price. Why don't we move back, get a guy we think is of equal value, and get a few extra picks for our trouble. So it's always fascinating for me to see it. And when, you know, you come down the line a few years from now, you know how Dallas valued certain players,
right.
things like that.
Right.
But I think from a fan standpoint, it's fascinating. They did have Ezekiel Elliott as the top player on their board. And certain, for them, you can understand why. It's not that he's necessarily the best pure player that they're grading, but when you consider the fit with what they need and their want to return to the run game like when they had DeMarco Murray. But here's, to me, where it gets interesting. Jalen Ramsey was number two on their board. A lot of thought that Ramsey could go to the Cowboys, and that seems to be confirmed here. Laremy Tunsil was number three. We all know what happened to him on draft day. Joey Bosa was number four. He went one pick before Dallas. Then it went Jalen Smith, Miles Jack. And keep in mind, Dallas was one of those teams that you felt could snatch Miles Jack as the Jaguar fans were anticipating day two, and he could slide to them. Jalen Smith, a bit of a surprise to go in the top 10 picks in round two, but they had him graded as the fifth best overall player. Had they just had him graded one spot lower, below Miles Jack is probably a Dallas Cowboy today, and who knows what happened with the Jags and all that great feeling of winning the draft. A lot of it came from the fact that you felt like you got a top five talent. Dallas felt, even with the issues, he was top six. It doesn't matter. You feel good about him anyway. It's nice to have that confirmation that another team was eyeing him with the same kind of value on him.
Sure, and I tell you, what's really fascinating to me about this is this is information that is so closely guarded. You know, with all of the misinformation that's thrown out from these teams, you know, over the course of drafts, and it's something that it's so coveted to get this kind of information. I mean, it's truly and literally a snapshot of the thinking of an organization and how that organization wants to further itself and make these incredible moves and spend their millions of dollars. I mean, this is very specific information about the inner workings of an organization, maybe the most closely held information of a National Football League team that it ever has.
Certainly among the most closely held information. And they graded 16 players. We'll go through the list a little bit later of who exactly they ranked as a first rounder. There's no obvious surprise, but it is interesting to see, for instance, Ronnie Stanley who went to the Ravens, I think, sixth overall in place of Laremy Tunsil, or they could have gone that way. They said Stanley was their top-ranked offensive lineman. Dallas had him ranked 16th among available players in the draft, which is probably a little bit closer to where the consensus was on that. And just fascinating to me to see where these guys come in. And they do grant in this story, which you can find at various places, you can just Google Dallas Cowboy 2016 draft board, that it's a handwritten board, that it may not have been the final product, but it was somewhere either copied from the product or it was a step in the process and probably pretty close to, you know, this is worked out all the way through seven rounds, which players have even seventh round value, and they show you where each player ended up going, who the Dallas Cowboys selected, who was available at the point that they selected. So, to me, pretty fascinating stuff. So we'll get into that a little bit later on.
What kind of security measures are the Cowboys going through today to try and identify where this intel came from?
You know, because it's the second time, 2013, a very similar thing happened. It was a partial draft board, and I think Jerry Jones actually admitted after that, you know what, yeah, that was our draft board, and it lined up with what Dallas did in the draft that
year. Apparently, this is the third time. This happened also in 2010. Apparently, the website that's posting this, the SB Nation and Cowboys website, bloggingtheboys.com. In 2010, apparently the team site for the Cowboys posted a video.
Right.
And so fans of the team put still pictures and pieced it all together. So this is now the third time, 2010, 2013, and the 2016 draft. Third time in the last 6 years the draft board's been
late. Every 3 years, you can count on the Cowboys to give us something to talk about in July, and we appreciate that. 641-1010, let's go to the phones for the first time today. Welcome in Tom down at Palm Coast talking about the three most indispensable Jaguars other than Blake Bortles. Good morning, Tom. How are you?
Great. How are you, sir?
Fantastic. What's on your mind today?
I was just talking about the three most indispensable players. I had Hearns, Linder, and Ramsey.
Okay, Hearns, you think Hearns, I'm just curious, I'm not arguing, I mean, it's an opinion thing, but Hearns, more so than Allen Robinson, you think, is indispensable?
I think Robinson is unstoppable, just unstoppable. But you got to have that second and third wide receiver that takes some pressure off of him, kind of like Keenan and Jimmy.
Okay.
And I think that, Robinson, yes, if they lose him, other than Blake, I think they're in serious trouble.
All right, but officially you're going Hearns, Linder, and Jalen Ramsey.
Right. Yeah, right. Linder, because the offensive line is so, I mean, it's new, it's revamped, and Linder, I think, is going to be one of the big-time leaders. And same with Ramsey. I think Ramsey's going to be rookie He could be in the top three for rookie of the year this year.
Not, you may be right, Tom. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. I would argue this, Barry, if you're going to say one wide receiver is indispensable, and I'm not sure any are because it's such a strong group, right? And we're not grading who are the best three players. We're looking at, you know, how deep you are at those positions as well. Given a choice between Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns, nobody is taking any shots at Allen Hurns, but Allen Robinson, I think, has just more high-end ability, high-end potential. He's bigger. I think he's equally as fast. He can just, with his size, I can think he can do things athletically that Allen Hurns can't match. Allen Hurns has been fantastic 2 years in a row.
Absolutely.
But if you're going to choose one, I would think even the Jags, if forced to admit it, would admit Allen Robinson's the guy you'd have to keep.
Yeah, see, I didn't go wide out on my list, and I only I went two defensively, one offensively. My offensive guy is Julius Thomas. Because I think that sets up kind of the domino effect. If Julius Thomas can have a terrific year, then obviously, you know, that's going to loosen some things up on the outside for those guys. And I agree with you. I mean, you know, Hurns and Robinson are terrific. And if Julius Thomas is my guy in terms of having kind of an X factor there, if he can really live up to, again, expectations and be a true target, and then, you know, defensive, you can't take him for granted ever, and that's going to open some things up, I think, on the outside for Bortles, and which may continue our big play capability.
Right, and the funny thing is too, I mean, he may open things up for those guys. They already were pretty opened up for themselves last year, you know, with their ability. But it's going to work both ways. There are going to be times when those outside guys are getting the coverage, and you've got to be able to exploit the seam of the field.
Correct.
All right, and that's what Julius Thomas has proven he can do. Then if you can get all those things working, it makes running the ball that much easier, right? And then all of a sudden, you get less predictable on offense, considering how predictable they really were last year. When you consider there were long stretches, they just simply could not run the football.
Correct.
To have the success they had throwing the football in those circumstances, pretty phenomenal, actually. You know,
that's true.
And we talked about it a little bit yesterday. There were times when you're behind and the other team's playing a little prevent defense. We're not saying that to wipe away everything that the passing game did. It's a factor in the overall numbers, but the bottom line is teams pretty much knew what was coming, and they couldn't completely stop it last year. You get Julius Thomas going completely healthy from the jump, and he's definitely a candidate for most indispensable outside of Blake Bortles. We'll get into the rest of the candidates. We'll debate some of them. Who does Barry have on his list on defense? Who do I have? I'll tell you coming up next. 641-1010 if you'd like to get on board. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Note for you, for some who've been asking, we mentioned Donovan Darius might be in this week. In fact, he will be in. He'll join us in studio tomorrow to talk about the Jags offseason and to talk more about his multi-day camp, which is coming up next week. And you can find out more about that by getting on board online at DariusNextLevelTraining.com. He's got a camp from July 25th through the 27th, offensive specialty training on day one, defensive specialty training on day two, and safe tackling techniques and football game skills on day three. You can do for 1, 2, or 3 days. And you get all the information at DariusNextLevelTraining.com. Donovan will be in tomorrow to talk more about it and just talk about the Jags offseason in general and all those good things as well. Question of the day today, who are the three most indispensable Jaguars not named Blake Bortles? Defensively, I think you and I share the opinion about Dante Fowler Jr.
On my list, yes.
Is it you got a team that has struggled to find pass rush seemingly forever, really. I mean, seemingly since Tony Brackens stalked the defensive side of the football, right? And but particularly in the last few years, Barry, Gus Bradley does not like to blitz. You know, if he doesn't have to, rather get after you with his front four. They haven't had the talent to be able to do that consistently. They've had spurts here and there a couple of years ago with Sindarik Marks, but a lot is expected of Dante Fowler on a team. And I get it. It's his first year. And no one's saying he has to have 15 sacks or be a Pro Bowler, but you're talking about, I think, the most talented pass rusher on the football field That's why they drafted him where they drafted him, just on talent. Doesn't have the experience. Don't know it yet if his game will translate to the NFL level. Love to see the fact that he hasn't missed any practices this all season. The knee doesn't look like it's going to be an issue at this point in time. On a team that is so desperate to pressure the quarterback, how can Dante Fowler Jr. not be one of the most indispensable players on this team?
It's kind of a two-pronged pick for me. As you very well explained there, the need for his production is just the bottom line to everything. And they desperately have to have the ability to rush the passer and stay out of these, you know, situations that are giving opposing offenses just so many manageable downs to gain yardage. And the other one for me is that you also mentioned is the draft placement. You know, I want to see him do well for his production, number one, and to keep the team from having another high failed draft pick.
Right.
You know, it's they obviously thought so much of him, and his, you know, I think the ceiling is so high. Hope the ceiling is so high for his ability. So, you know, to be able again to draft someone where they chose to draft Dante Fowler Jr., really it makes it very important, I think, for him to have success on the field this year.
And that doesn't mean Yannick Ngakoue can't do something as a rookie. He is, by all accounts, throughout OTAs, very impressive with his quickness. You can't really tell exactly what a guy's going to be when you can't fully put your hands on another player and they don't have full contact practice going on. There's always a little bit of contact. It's unavoidable in the offseason. But, you know, if Ngakoue is going to flourish, I think it's best for him to flourish in a role where it's not thrust all upon him all at once.
Right.
If you've got Fowler who's creating some havoc up front and other guys who are getting some push from the defensive tackle position, and you can bring in Ngakoue as a sub-package guy and just kind of cut him loose and focus on that as opposed to potentially playing a much larger role, which I think Fowler is going to have to do on this team. That's one of the reasons it's not just Fowler, it's the guys behind him. I think it makes their job easier as well if he can have some success this year.
Well, and isn't it exciting just to be having the conversation
about potential
multiple guys?
Right.
You know, I mean, besides the draft picks, I mean, if you get, you know, Senderic back to where he was 2 years ago, you know, and Fowler can live up to his promise. And again, you've got Yannick in there, you know, as a newbie, and, you know, and Jackson on the interior, you know, if he can cause some havoc in there as well. I mean, I am thrilled at the potential of this defense that can really, I think, push this team to where, you know, many of us, including you, I think, thought maybe they should have been a year ago.
I think it should have been. I want to see them push beyond where I thought they should have been
correct.
A year ago.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Because I really do, and I've said this, that I think they were a 7-win team last year.
Yep.
I think if they had just gotten out of their own way, certainly the first Indy game, either one of those kicks is a victory. And
right.
I get it. The Baltimore game is one that maybe if you play that out, the end scenario 50 times, you might only win it once or twice. So I guess those things can even out. But I felt like they should have been, all things considered, about a 7-win team last year. So I'm looking for a step from that point on. And again, we can't get inside the mind of Shad Khan and Dave Caldwell to know what's going to be satisfactory. And every Jaguar fan's got their own opinion of that. But I definitely think they can be a 9-win team. I think they can be a double-digit win team. I just don't think it's very likely that they're going to get 10, 11, 12. Could it happen? Well, we've seen it happen in the NFL.
Right.
You know, you go back, people talking about you don't turn it around in 1 year. Well, sometimes you do, right? Go back when Matt Ryan and Joe Flacco were rookies, okay? The year before, Atlanta and Baltimore were both 4-win teams. And they had them winning double-digit games right out of the gates. They made a big improvement at the quarterback position. I think Blake can make another improvement, but it's just when you look around now, and there are the glaring holes that have been there the last few years don't seem to be there, at least not nearly in the quantity. I don't know if there's a glaring hole. There's some depth issues on this team, but when they roll out their healthy starting unit, you know, I think they're pretty solid, if that's assuming Kelvin Beachum is ready to go and play left tackle and play it at a pretty high level.
Right. And you have to be wary also of, I mean, the other teams in the division, you know, they all think they're better, you know.
Sure. There's no question.
You know, so I think the one thing that kind of gives me pause about, you know, getting over that double-digit win mark is just strictly schedule-based. You know, I'm not sure for that this is a 10-win schedule for the Jaguars this year. So, and again, I mean, that will I would love to see the Jaguars for once get off to a good start. You know, gain a little momentum, play well early, and start kind of feeling good about themselves and gain a little confidence. I truly believe that has an effect on what still, I think, in a lot of ways is a young team.
You know what, though? You say that you don't see this as a 10-win schedule, right? I think they have to get out of that mindset. You know, forget that. Go, if you win the opener against Green Bay, that mindset crumbles completely.
Well, that's absolutely.
And tell me they can beat Green Bay. I'm not saying they should be favored or whatever, but Green Bay is not three touchdowns better than the Jacksonville Jaguars. They shouldn't be just based on the talent that they have.
Agreed.
Aaron Rodgers, absolutely, big help. But you get them in the first game of the season with Jordy Nelson coming back from a torn ACL. Eddie Lacy, a notoriously slow starter. They're coming down to the Florida Heat that they're not going to be acclimated to. I think there's a great opportunity there. And if you win that game mentally, I think the perception of the entire rest of the schedule changes. So the Jags,
it's a big game.
They need to get to a point, Barry, where we don't say, oh, it's a tough schedule. They're all tough. Every year, they're playing 16
NFL games. And you feel like
NFL
you can beat
games.
Anybody.
Right. You're right. You're certainly not that you're expected to run the table, but that you're capable in any given week of holding your own. And it's not like last year when you went to New England, you said, there's just no way.
Shot.
they're not stopping Tom Brady last
funny.
Year. Here's a couple on the text line. This just amazes me. Corners and linebackers are a big deal. Why not mention Ramsey and Smith? Maybe if they went to Florida, they'd get a shout out. At least they can make it through a single practice.
For the love of
Pete. I mean, honestly. It's such small-mindedness right there. By the way, we were talking about Ramsey, the caller was, a few minutes ago, and then someone said, sleeping on Fowler, huh? All this talent and even local media hating on their own team. We just said he's indispensable to their success. How is that
hating
on Dante Fowler Jr.? People, put it this way. When did you get in the broadcast business? What year was your first year?
84.
Nothing's changed.
Nothing's changed.
In terms
right?
of people hearing what they think they hear or want to hear.
Right.
641-1010. Let's go to Bud up in Pennsylvania checking in on the question of the day. Good morning, Bud. How are you?
I'm doing fine, sir. And how about you guys?
We're great. We want to know, outside of Blake Bortles, who do you think are the three most indispensable players on the Jags this year?
Well, I'm not going to go with pass rush because I believe that back end on needs to be improved.
Okay.
And I believe Gibson and Miles Jack to, give the pass rush, a chance. And I'll also go with Thomas, and I'll take it off the air.
All right, sounds good. And, Barry, I mentioned to you, and we haven't said it on the air yet, Tayshaun Gibson would be, to me, without question, maybe the single most indispensable player on this team outside of Blake Bortles. And it wasn't the most high-profile guy that they signed, but I don't know if there's a more important guy that they signed for what they've been lacking on this defense and the ability that he brings to that position. It's not just that they signed one last year in Sergio Brown. They signed a safety. They're signing a former Pro Bowler who still should be in the prime of his career and at a gaping position of need.
Right. And I don't think there is not, for me, not one area that needs improvement more than this team's ability to get off the field after third down. You know, the conversion rate for the opponents is just obviously unacceptable. And this team has to do a better job. And I think that alone, I mean, could translate into two wins, three wins. They could just get off the field.
Right. Yeah, oh no, you're absolutely right. I mean, just a few more defensive stops here and there. That and a few less, backbreaking turnovers at the wrong time for Blake Bortles. We'll get into that coming up in a little bit. Tyler found some stats about Blake in wins versus losses and how he's performed in those circumstances. So for me, again, I would put Fowler, I would put Tayshaun Gibson, and I'd probably vacillate a little bit between Julius Thomas and Allen Robinson. I despite the fact that it's such a strong position group, I just think Allen Robinson right now is quickly proving himself to be one of the best at his spot in the National Football League. And it's tough to take 1,400 yards and 14 touchdowns out of your lineup and say that that's not indispensable to some
right.
degree. I don't know. I don't agree with Linder so much because I we haven't seen him even play center at the pro level yet. You know what I mean?
Right.
I'd love to say Beecham, because that would anticipate him being back to the level he was a couple of years ago. And if that were the case, he may be the guy on offense that I would lean towards. Who was your third? You had Thomas, you had
Jackson,
Fowler.
Malik Jackson.
Malik Jackson. Okay. And for him, you know, they certainly spent the money on him, like they feel he's indispensable. But I just feel like that position group, defensive tackle, has got more quality depth to it than some of the other ones do.
Yeah, especially if Sendarek can come back to his you know, level of play from a couple of years ago.
All right, you guys are killing me on the text line. Hasn't been a year, much longer than that. Stop giving the passes and be honest. What does that mean? I don't have no idea what that's in reference to, but maybe if you would like to clear that up in a future text, we would appreciate it. Here's another. Y'all are talking like Fowler's going to be a Pro Bowler when he can't even make it through a full practice. So sorry, that is just ridiculous to me that you think somebody who's never played a single down or made it through a single off season is indispensable. Well, he's made it through this off season. A guy got hurt in his first practice. When you say he can't make it through a single practice, you assume that he forever will be a gimp the moment he walks on the field. He hasn't missed a practice this offseason. They desperately need him. He may have been one of the most indispensable players last year, and it showed up. His absence in not having that guy impacted the pass rush, right? I mean, wow. Amazing. You haven't seen Fowler play at all. How do you take him over Linder? Makes no gosh dang sense. That's what they said, but that I take him because, again, it's critical. They don't have depth there. I think they can survive a stretch without Linder better than they could survive a stretch without Dante Fowler. That's how I have it. That's why it's an opinion-based question. You're certainly welcome to put your three most indispensable players forward as well. Michael in St. Augustine next up on 1010XL. Good morning, Michael.
Hey, how are you, sir?
What's up?
Hey, I was just calling in. I think the top three would be Gibson, Fowler, and the other guy, I can't think of his name now, I'm sorry, but the new running back that they signed.
Chris Ivory.
Ivory.
Yes.
Because I think Ivory, you take the pressure off of Bortles if you can run the ball.
Certainly. I mean, we've had many people mention Chris Ivory as well, Barry, and we'll get to him in a second. First of all, Michael, obviously, is a Gator homer because he didn't mention Telvin Smith or Jalen Ramsey or Rashad Green. So clear, I'm kidding, Michael. And how can you pick a guy who's never played a down? Chris Ivory, compared to T.J. Yeldon, how do you see that playing out in the backfield? Like, do you envision basically Chris Ivory's the first couple of downs, the thumper between the tackles, goal line back, Yeldon, for lack of a better term, kind of the third down guy, more the pass catching threat? Is it that simple, or is it going to be more of a hot hand situation?
You know, I think a little of both, honestly. I think because opposing defenses are you know, positioned differently in terms of how they play against the run. And I think having those two guys who are, you know, somewhat different in style. I mean, Ivory's a guy, you know, I mean, he'll knock the taste out of your mouth. I mean, he is a bruising kind of guy, you know, that can, again, create these, you know, hopefully second and short, third and shorts, you know, that will open things up now for possibly T.J. Yeldon as a third down back type of guy that could break some things open when you know, the Jaguars have some down the field options. I think it gives them a lot of options. I don't know that Yeldon, I wouldn't want to pigeonhole Yeldon just yet into being just a third down guy. But boy, Ivory just, again, it gives you a lot of excitement to talk about the possibilities.
Right. I think they certainly looked at T.J. Yeldon when they drafted him as much more than just a third down guy.
Agreed.
And, but I think at the same time, when he went out last year, so went the running game with him, right? And they just couldn't run the football. And whether it's Ivory or you, I don't think it matters to them. You know, as long as they find if one guy gets a rhythm, let him roll with it. And that's the way it's going to go. Mike Dempsey, Barry Milligan in studio with me here on Jaguars Today in the 1010XL World Headquarters, along with Tyler Devitt. Coming up, we'll take more of your phone calls. This date in football, the Honda Drive around the NFL coming up as well. You can weigh in on the question of the day or any other aspect of Jaguar football. The question is, other than Blake Bortles, who are the three most indispensable Jaguars for the 2016 season? It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you this week by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Just one note on this date in football history, nothing that really happened per se, as opposed to a birthday to celebrate. Local legend LeRoy Butler good friend of yours, Bear Facts. Yeah. It's kind of coincidental.
He's really. I mean, first time I ever really met Leroy Butler, and this is going back the old Lamb at Large days again. David Lamb and I were back. We're down in the Gator Bowl. We always did a special Lamb at Large show every year on the All City football team, and it was it was his senior year at Lee, and you could tell this guy had a little bit of personality because David asked anybody if they wanted to sing, and Leroy, I mean, without a hint of hesitation, sang Santa Claus is Coming to Town.
Did he? We all know it.
It was perfect. And obviously, too, in my days of doing sideline reporting for Sunshine Network, got to know him and, you know, a lot of the local guys, actually. But, you know, Edgar Bennett and Leroy Butler were two of my favorite people of all time.
Leroy Butler, 4 Pro Bowls, 4-time first-team All-Pro.
Yeah, baby.
Member of the 1990s All-Decade team in the National Football League and a Super Bowl champion with the Green Bay Packers. That's what you got for this date in football history, brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. If you need a family dentist or cosmetic work done, you can't find any better. Go to jamesjmccall.com. Get a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Mike Dempsey, I have some breaking news related to the Jaguars and Pokemon.
Oh, the Jags.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Is it the same news item?
No, actually, the Jaguars will have the first ever Pokemon Safari held in a professional sporting venue. It will be up in the FanDuel zone and will take place at Everbank Field Monday, July 25th from 6 to 8 p.m. The event is free and open to all Pokemon trainers and members of the general public, and you have to register online. Jaguars.com/Pokemon.
Is there going to be a rare Jackson DeVille Pokemon? That's available. All right. Hey, look, man. They're trying everything. All right. The Pokemon Safari. I saw that in my inbox circa 12 minutes ago. So you're right. So
the Jaguars' first ever inside a major professional sports venue. So that's
big one to be excited
breaking
about.
Breaking news there for them. Let's get to the Honda driver on the NFL. Some football related news. Broncos cornerback Aqib Talib told the Denver Post on Monday he should be ready to play by the start of training camp. In early June, Talib was hospitalized after shooting himself at a Dallas nightclub. Talib was shot in the leg but reportedly did not damage any arteries or ligaments and only required stitches for the gunshot wound. The NFL still has an ongoing investigation. Longtime Chicago Bears cornerback Charles Peanut Tillman announced his retirement yesterday. Tillman played in 12 games for the Panthers last season but tore his ACL and recorded 55 tackles and 2 picks. But obviously, tearing his ACL, he missed their Super Bowl run. After suffering the injury, he spent 2003 to 2014 in Chicago and probably will go down as the best defensive back in Bears history and one of the best ever to force fumbles using his famed peanut punch. He departed the Bears last offseason as the Bears' all-time leader in defensive touchdowns, interception return touchdowns, and interception return yards, and he had 36 picks, which are third in Bears history. Free agent running back Arian Foster, we talked about yesterday, him meeting with the Miami Dolphins and was going to try out for them when they reached a one-year deal. The deal was worth $1.5 million, an additional $2 million in incentives. Foster turns 30 next month. And I know, Mike, we saw some Jaguars fans that were kind of comparing the Chris Ivory signing and saying, which one would you rather have? And it seems pretty obvious you'd rather have Ivory because he's not making as much as everyone thinks he's making
this
year.
The guy's coming off a torn Achilles and hasn't played a full season since, I think, 2012. And Arian Foster, he was a great player at his peak, a great player. But Chris Ivory right now is probably the better player and certainly appears to be the more durable player at this point in time. And you're not just looking at a short-term fix. That's a case of Miami struck out on C.J. Anderson. Then they tried Chris Johnson, and they struck out on signing him. So Arian Foster was pretty far down their list of guys that they were going to sign. So you would say, would you rather have Chris Ivory? I guess the Dolphins would have rather had Chris Johnson. So, yes, I would rather have Chris Ivory in this circumstance. And, by the way, Chris Ivory's making only $2 million this year. He had a $5 million signing bonus that's prorated. His cap hit is $3.25. It's not $6 million.
Right.
Okay?
The backloaded deal.
Yes.
Moving on, former Jaguars head coach and 2-time Super Bowl winning coach with the New York Giants, Tom Coughlin, will go into the Ring of Honor up in New York. So congratulations to TC.
Absolutely.
And one final story here.
Great man.
A Ballers-related note. Season 2 of HBO's hit series Ballers kicked off Sunday night and featured a number of cameos from NFL players, including the Miami Dolphins' Ndamukong Suh and the Ravens' linebacker Terrell Suggs. The show's executive producer, Mark Wahlberg, said Roger Goodell called him to complain about the show in a recent appearance on ESPN Radio.
The first season of the show, the only calls I was getting were from guys like Roger Goodell saying, you can't do this, and various owners in the league. And what we're saying is, you know, it's actually a good thing for the league and for the players because, you know, hopefully, you know, you'll kind of, you know, get the word out there and with the crazy stuff and the financial side of it, you know, hopefully get these guys to realize that they got to be more careful with what they do with their money.
An NFL spokesman disputed Wahlberg's claims on Twitter yesterday, stating that Goodell never personally called Wahlberg to complain about the show itself.
Well, he did say guys like Roger Goodell. He didn't say Roger actually called. He did. If you listen to it, he said guys like Roger Goodell called me.
So it's guys of that power is what he's saying.
I don't know if there's another one other than an owner of that power in the league. But let's be honest here. Hey, Mark Wahlberg, I'm sure the show's fine. I haven't seen it. I have nothing against Marky Mark. But to suggest to the NFL that maybe this will do the league some good, be like the producers of Playmaker saying, hey, this will show them about the dangers of making a drug deal in the parking lot at halftime of a game like Playmakers once depicted on the show. Sure. Hey, guys, here's what not to do. Right. I'm sure that was their intent of doing the show Baller. So there you have it. I've got an item on Leroy Butler I want to get to, but let's get John on the south side. He's been hanging on the line at 641-1010, wants to weigh in on the question of the day, which is, other than Blake Bortles, who are your three most indispensable players on the Jaguars for 2016? John, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. What's on your mind?
So I'm going to say Julius Thomas.
Okay.
I'm going to do Paz, and then Jason Myers. I say Jason Myers because he affected a lot of the games last year and made Blake do things he probably wouldn't have done. So if he actually got to kick the field goals a little better or extra points, I think he put the offensive mind at a better movement.
All right. I would say that I don't know if we can assume he's going to do that, but I understand the point you're going. And I might go more along the lines of a dependable kicker would be if you're expecting this team to maybe be in a lot more competitive games, close games, you want to win the ones that you can win. I can see that. Guy missed 7 extra points last year. We talked about this at length yesterday, Barry.
Yeah, I caught that.
Right, only missed 4 field goals, but still his percentage on field goals is about middle of the pack.
Mid-80s.
83, something like that. Yeah. If he hits the first one against Indy, right, well, then he doesn't miss the second one, obviously. That takes 2 misses out, and he would have been something like 27 for 29 on the season, which would have been excellent, right, including that game
takes
winner.
Takes you into that 90% threshold
but then
where you want to be.
You still got to – it's clearly he's got the leg. He had a long of 58 last year.
Right.
He's got 60-plus distance. Question is, does he tighten up when it comes time to kick that extra point, which is much shorter but longer than it used to be? To me, it's clearly a mental issue.
Absolutely.
With him. You know, it was last year. Hopefully it won't be a lingering one.
Yeah, it's like standing over that 3-footer. You know,
I've never had that problem.
That you should be able to make, you know, 90% of the time. And then it's like, the air gets a little thin.
As soon as somebody says it's good, I slap that thing in the heart of the single time.
With one hand.
One hand. Just swipe it right in there, man. But I've missed more 3-5 footers in my life than I care to remember. Leroy Butler was one of only 3 players to be named first team all decade in the 1990s. Other than specialists, okay, offense, defense, who is not in the Pro Football Hall of Fame right now.
Wow.
3 guys. One of them is the pride of the Jaguars, Tony Boselli, who is literally the only offensive player on the first team from the all-decade team of the 1990s. This is the all-decade team of the 1990s offense. John Elway, Barry Sanders, Emmitt Smith in the backfield.
Oof.
Jerry Rice, Chris Carter at wide receiver. This is the company Tony's keeping as a member of this team.
Right.
Shannon Sharp at the tight end spot. Your tackles were Boselli and Gary Zimmerman. Your guards were Bruce Matthews and Randall McDaniel. And your center was Dermonti Dawson. Every single one of them enshrined in Canton. In fact, half the second team is in Canton. Willie Rofe was a second team tackle on the All-90s team. He's in Canton, Ohio, as a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So, clearly, in my opinion, Tony Boselli belongs in there based on the high-end play. I get the number of years. Who's the Miami offensive lineman? I bring him up from time to time. He was a center for the Dolphins in like the 80s. You know what I'm talking about?
I do.
And he's in the Hall of Fame, and he started fewer games than Tony Boselli
did.
And no one's Dwight Stevenson. Thank you very much. And nobody ever brings him up as a guy who doesn't belong in Canton, Ohio. Defensively, here's your all-defensive first team for the 1990s. Bruce Smith and Reggie White. Yeah, pretty good spot here, right? You got Cortez Kennedy and John Randall at your defensive tackle position. Your linebackers are Derek Thomas, Junior Seau, and Kevin Green, who just got in. Cornerbacks Deion Sanders and Rod Woodson.
Okay.
And then your safeties didn't make it in. Leroy Butler and Steve Atwater, who is just a finalist, however, which indicates he probably will make it in.
Right.
You're talking about the two guys with the strong Jacksonville connections in Butler and Baselli could be the truly the only players who are on the first team of the 1990s that are not in the Hall of Fame.
Well, I think they should go in the same class.
Be awesome.
And we take the show on the road, baby.
There you go.
We're going to Canton.
That would be good.
Right.
Heck, if Baselli ever does get in one day, you compare him to, at his best, he was the best. And that ranking right there shows you how he was regarded. He was a five-time Pro Bowler in 6 years. You know, what more could the guy do? And, it's the same knock against Terrell Davis, but Terrell Davis played 6 years and had like two outstanding ones, two monsters, and then a couple other pretty good ones.
Yeah.
Baselli was better at what he did, in my opinion, than Terrell Davis was, in his opinion. Yet Terrell Davis, because I think the position he played, and he's got the rings, factored in and gets him a lot of attention every time the vote comes up.
Right.
You know, still gets mentioned a lot.
I'm really surprised. You know, I think it's an oversight, to say the least, that Tony's not in. And, you know, and Leroy Butler's resume, you know, I mean, the guy's, well, he's a legend on maybe the most legendary team in the National Football League, in the history of the National Football League. Played his entire career in Green Bay. I mean, he stops traffic in the entire state of Wisconsin, you know, wherever he goes. He is so revered in that area, and I think these are two glaring oversights.
And again, for me, you know, four-time Pro Bowler, four-time first team All-Pro, which, you know, there are two safeties that get named first-team All-Pro in the league, and so at his best, he was the best, for a period of time. Here are second-teamers that are in: Brett Favre, Thurman Thomas, Michael Irvin, Tim Brown, Willie Rofe, and Larry Allen on offense. Defensively, Chris Dolman, Warren Sapp, Darrell Green, Aeneas Williams, and Ronnie Lott. So Leroy Butler made the all-90s team over Ronnie Lott. and Carnell Lake, by the way, was the other safety who played a brief time with the Jags, made the Pro Bowl in 99. Pretty bad. Hardy Nickerson, another one who was on the all-90s team, who had a little bit of time here in Jacksonville with the Jaguars. And Steve Wisniewski, I think is Stefan's uncle, is what it is. I remember talking to him about this last year. I'm pretty sure that's his uncle. Was a second-team guard on the offensive side of things. Every time his name comes up, I always think I'm going to look up and see where that list is now in terms of filling in with the Hall of Famers. The specialist, Deion, was the punt returner, so he's in, but you're not going to get Morton Anderson in Jags. He's in the Jags
Love
Hall
him.
Of Fame.
Love it. He's awesome.
The best kicker ever.
Absolutely.
Who didn't play for the Jags. Darren Bennett and Michael Bates were your kick returners on the first team, and Bill Parcells was the coach of the 1990s. Interestingly enough, I guess he won one Super Bowl with the Giants in 90, right, against the Buffalo Bills.
Mm-hmm.
Won his previous one in 86, and that was still good enough. Marv Levy was the second team coach, also in the Hall of Fame. So there you have it. All right, 6-4-1-10-10. We'll continue the conversation. Most indispensable Jacksonville Jaguars other than Blake Bortles, and coming up in a little bit, we'll check in on the fan feedback, what you've been saying on that as well. 6-4-1-10-10 on the phone lines and the text line, driven by Duval Ford. Barry Milligan joins us in studio. Mike Dempsey along with Tyler Devitt. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Tyler Devitt, do we know when the Jaguar games that are going to be played on YouTube will be posted? Remember, the NFL is going to post a bunch of vintage games on YouTube. No word on the...
Your guess is as good as mine. I'm just worried about this Pokemon thing going on Monday night, Mike.
Well, I just got on the text line. By the way, what the heck are we listening to here? What is it?
The Pokemon theme song.
Is that what this is?
Oh, I'm glad you didn't know. I had no idea.
There's lyrics in it, so it's got to mean something.
You're going to pull your man card.
This is a Pokemon theme song? Really? Was this... What was it, like a cartoon of Pokemon?
This is probably 15 years old, I'm assuming.
Is it?
From a childhood, apparently.
All right. This goes up there with Hacker's My Buddy doll, right? It's your own personal My Buddy type situation. Somebody said on the text line, on the Pokemon Safari, there'll be a Dan Marino Mon 62-7, but it'll be planted flat on the field if you're looking for it on Monday. So there you go. That's a little Jaguar beatdown humor for you coming at you right there.
That's not the way to go out.
No. But they sent him and Jimmy packing at the same time, which was quite nice. Jim Kelly, too? Jim Kelly's final game? Was that the playoff game? I might be wrong about that.
I don't know.
I have to look that one up. For some reason, I thought Jim Kelly's demise may have come there. Jim Kelly, bare fact, you've interviewed how many guys? Thousands of guys over the years,
Lord.
Right, in sports.
Yeah.
Jim Kelly, to me, the single nicest that I believe to be genuine. You don't know guy. I don't know Jim Kelly. You know, I don't hang out with him at his backyard barbecue. But in interviewing this guy, I haven't come across a nicer guy. And that's not to slight. I got plenty of friends, former Jaguars, guys like that. Just as genuine, as good a guy as you'd want to run into. I don't know if I've ever met a nicer one. Yeah, 96 was his last season in the league. So bounced him in the postseason. Jim Kelly, retire.
See
Dan Marino, see you. Sit down.
he was very cordial with me as well.
Who did you love covering?
Individually?
Yeah, just like a player, football player, or anybody that you always, who's your like go-to that you could always count on for a good quote or something along those lines?
You know, who was always fun was Charles Barkley.
Yeah,
when I got to do some Magic games back in the day during the Shaq and Penny days, and Barkley was always fun. He wasn't necessarily you had to really spot the mood, you know, whether he was going to be approachable or engaging or anything. But when he was, it was really fun, really fun.
All right. I've never met Barkley, never had any encounters with him. I can go either way on Barkley, depending on the day of the week. Sometimes
he gets a little full of himself, for sure.
Really annoys me.
Yeah. I get it.
Tyler dug up at a site called TheRinger.com. Is this one of your regular? I've never seen TheRinger.com.
You've never heard of The Ringer?
I've never.
This is Bill Simmons' brand new website. Basically,
that's why.
It's Grantland 2.0, pretty much.
Bill Simmons, Mr. Boston, which I hate the fact that I gave him a click now. Read Grantland. Not going to read The Ringer.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, man. There's great writers at both sides.
Yeah.
Even if you don't read Simmons, there's really good stuff there.
That's good.
But apparently Brock Osweiler is solid, according to one of the stats in here.
Solid in the Gus Bradley sense of being solid. In other words, needs to get his butt in gear.
Right.
Right? That's how Gus describes solid. This was 10 weird NFL stats from 2015 and what they mean for 2016 at TheRinger.com. Now I know it's Bill Simmons' site. Brock Osweiler, new Houston Texan quarterback, going to shake up the division for sure, right?
Ooh.
His accuracy percentage on passes 20 or more yards downfield ranked 34th out of 35 qualifying quarterbacks in 2015. Remind me, there are only 32 teams in the league,
right?
So
everybody and then some.
Yes.
I wonder if Peyton was 35.
It
might have been 35, seriously.
He may have been, because Peyton got that little noodle arm last year. But 26.7% complete. So he's basically one out of four on passes going 20 or more yards down the field. So what did they do? They went out and drafted a deep threat in Will Fuller. Let's maximize what Brock is good at doing, right? And look, I get it. They're looking for something on the opposite side of DeAndre Hopkins, but DeAndre Hopkins makes a lot of money catching the ball more than 20 yards down the field as well. The way I look at it, Barry, Osweiler, it's a small sample, but it's a mostly positive sample for him, right? He's 5-2 as a starter with Denver. Yes, they were loaded with a lot of talent, but regardless, he came in and got the job done. And you look at what Houston was dealing with at quarterback the last few years, particularly last year. I mean, Brian Hoyer, take his stats out of a handful of games. Brian Hoyer is not very good, as finally culminating with his meltdown in the postseason against Kansas City, where they got shut out 30-0. But you got a very solid defense. They add Lamar Miller to the backfield. And if Brock Osweiler is league average at quarterback,
just a manageable guy,
that's a step up from what they had.
Right.
So that doesn't mean that it's insurmountable. You can't beat the Texans. But if I'm in Houston, much like there's a lot of bullish Jag fans here, if I'm in Houston, I'm thinking, hey, we're the division champs. We were the division champs with terrible quarterback play. we've improved in their eyes as much as anybody in the division. I don't think that's necessarily true. I think the Jags improved more, but I think they also had further to come, right? But when you look at the infusion of everything they brought in, look, we're all rooting for Brock to fall on his face. Let's be honest.
Yes, we are.
I mean, if you're a supporter of the Jacksonville Jaguars, and when it comes time to throwing the ball down the field, and again, small sample size because he only played 7 games last year.
Right.
So
I hope they win 4, beat Indy twice and beat Tennessee twice.
That'd be all right.
That's
right?
Good.
I mean, if you want to get those four and twelve, somebody's got to go 4-12 right. Because and then Indy and Tennessee can split with each other and each go 1-15. Right, and that'd be
beautiful.
It'd be a perfect season.
That sounds awesome.
Let me look at some of these other earth-shattering stats and see which are pertinent. The Jets had the third-ranked red zone touchdown percentage in the NFL last year. A lot of that was Ryan Fitzpatrick was eerily efficient in the red zone for some reason. Then, much like Hoyer, had a playoff or a it would have been get him into the playoff game meltdown in week 17. Interestingly enough, when they signed Chris Ivory, they brought up some of the numbers, or some of the numbers were brought up. It wasn't great last year in short yardage situations, which you would expect him to be.
Yeah, you would.
With his size and his violent running style, you know? How much of the hope for improvement in your eyes for the running game comes from the addition of Ivory? How much are you just hoping getting Brandon Linder back and figuring out something on the left side of the offensive line has to make him better?
That's my key, is the O-line and how that's retooled and how those pieces come together. I think that just absolutely is going to be the tipping point for the improvement of this offense. I mean, Blake is, I think, surprisingly mobile for a guy of his size. And has a good ability to get rid of the ball, and I think his obviously his field vision will continue to improve. But I think it's all about the O-line for me.
Yeah, I mean, he's gotten hit way too many times. And is sacked way too many times. Couldn't get any push in the running game. I mean, there were times last year when, you know, trying to pick up 1 or 2 yards in a crucial situation was you're better off rolling your quarterback out and letting him throw it down the field.
You truly are.
You know, it seemed that way, at least.
Looked that way.
It looked that way, right? whether the numbers bear that out or not, they struggled in that department. But, again, room for growth. You could put Kelvin Beachum. I mean, somebody mentioned earlier, how can you put Dante Fowler in your most indispensable list? He's never played a game. Well, several people said that. How are you going to put Kelvin Beachum in there? Because he hasn't played in a while, and he's coming off a torn ACL himself. But at least he has played in the NFL, and at the time, his last full healthy season in some circles was regarded as a top 10 offensive tackle, left tackle in the National Football League. If they could get that level of play or something approaching that level of play out of him, heck, if they could get a middle of the pack, if they could get the 15th best left tackle in the league, and he was Kelvin Beachum this year, that would be a significant upgrade.
No doubt. And keep in mind, I mean, the offense still put up, I mean, big numbers. Such as it was with the offensive line that it had.
Right, but basically a touchdown more per game is what they scored from the previous season.
Correct.
And I think with more room for improvement on that end as well.
And for me, though, going back to the premise there, the indispensability of a guy like Fowler is where we're looking at the ceiling for the defense, you know, where we need to make improvements and you know, again, getting off the field after third down. You know, if you can – can you imagine – I mean, I think you've run the numbers on this. I may have heard it or may have dreamed it one evening when I was thinking of you, but that's another story. If we are able to gain another 6 points per game on offense, say on average,
right? Where would that rank?
And cut it down by 6 points on the defensive side. You know, I mean, if we come up with a net 12. We're going to win some games.
Well, come up with a net 12, and then maybe going 12-4.
Honestly,
if you come up with that big of an improvement on each side of the football. So, a lot of optimism, like we said. And what are we now? Just about a week and a half from seeing them on the field for the first time. What's your gut tell you? What kind of a team are we seeing from the Jacksonville Jaguars? You can't predict what injuries will occur, but if they don't get hit any harder than the average, what are you expecting out of them this year?
I mean, I'm hoping for 9 if we can steal one. I think that would be amazing. But I'm thinking this team is – I'm thinking it's a 9-win plateau. I think the defense will be significantly better. Just if if half of the new pieces in the puzzle, you know, play up to potential.
Right.
I think the defense, you know, has the capacity to be just significantly better.
Right. And well, you expect Malik Jackson to play at a high level.
Sure.
Because he's a vet and he's been there. You expect, I hope, certainly, / expect Tayshaun Gibson. And I expect Prince Mukamara to be an upgrade over mostly what they've been running out there.
Right.
Which doesn't have to be a Pro Bowler. And then, you know, if Fowler does give you 8 sacks this year and some consistent pressure, then you can ease Miles Jack and Jalen Ramsey into the mix a little bit more.
Right.
You can afford it because that's already a pretty big improvement on that side of the ball.
Absolutely. And these young guys, too, you know, you hope that you don't, by injury or poor play or whatever, you don't have to throw them into the fire, you know, and so that you can pick some spots for them to be able to develop and learn the game, to be able to make the transition to this level, to give them a greater opportunity, I think, to succeed.
I appreciate you coming in today, man.
Hey,
it's been fun hanging out.
Thanks for
out
having
with
me.
You.
Always fun.
Barry Milligan.
About 5 months from now, when I get the shoulder repaired, we're going to hit the golf course again.
You threaten me with that. I'll be ready, my friend. I would just say to you, I don't want to see you have a setback in your rehab, so be careful collecting your Pokemon Go guys at the stadium on Monday.
Well, what I have to do, honestly, is keep from hitting bicyclists on First Street and Neptune Beach who are glued to their phones
right,
and not paying
riding
any
with their
attention.
Head down, right.
Absolutely. Yeah. I almost nailed. I mean, I was going for the 3-pin the other day. In down what they call downtown Jack's Beach. I mean, kids just cruising around right in the middle of the street, back and forth, in and out of the lanes, glued to the phone.
Hey, as long as you
playing
get
Pokemon.
As long as you get Pikachu,
there you go.
It's worth
That's it.
That's all it's all about. There he goes, Barry Milligan.
Take care, buddy.
Good to see you, pal. There he goes. As we will continue on, we'll look at the fan feedback spotlight today. Who did you say were the most indispensable Jacksonville Jaguars, with the exception of Blake Bortles? That was our question of the day, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. We'll take a look at the results coming up next on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, we continue along here. Thanks again to Barry Milligan for stopping in. Tomorrow, Donovan Darius, you know him, a former Jacksonville Jaguar safety, will join me in studio to talk about the Jags offseason. And he's got his camp coming up, his 3-day camp, as a matter of fact, coming up starting next week. Man, I tell you what, my phone is really ticking me off.
Your phone's old. You got like a Galaxy S2.
It's an S6.
Oh, really? Oh, I forgot you upgraded. That's right.
Yeah. It's asking me if I want to change my messaging app, and I don't want to change my messaging app. Get away from me. It's just bothering me right now. Get away from me, boy. You bother me. Donovan Darius has a camp next week, I should say, starting on Monday, I believe it is, the 25th. Yeah, that would make it Monday. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of next week at Davis Park in St. Johns County. You can have your kids participate for 1, 2, or all 3 days. Day one will be an offensive specialty training day. Day two, a defensive specialty training day. And then day three, safe tackling techniques and general football skills. And you can find out more by going to DariusNextLevelTraining.com. D-A-R-I-U-S, DariusNextLevelTraining.com. Donovan will be in tomorrow to talk more about what's going on with that and just talk about Jags off season in general. Didn't really get too deep into this. This draft board of the Cowboys does fascinate me, and I will study this at length a little bit later on. Mentioned earlier, for those who may have missed it, there's a story out, the Dallas Cowboys, another picture. I say another because it's happened twice in the past, 2010, 2013. But a picture of the Cowboys' actual draft board got posted somehow on the internet. Some reporter probably took it, didn't realize what was in the background, or felt that, you know, a couple months after the draft, because apparently this came out, it was posted somewhere like 2.5 months after the draft. Anyway, Ezekiel Elliott was the number one player on the board. Jerry Jones said after the draft, Elliott was their number one player and that Jalen Ramsey was number two on their board. This chart reflects that. They had 16 guys graded as first rounders. I think it was 16. But they had Ramsey as their number two player and Miles Jack as their number six. Of course, in the second round, Dallas selected before the Jags, and they took Jalen Smith, the linebacker out of Notre Dame, who knows, you know, nerve damage in his recovery, he may not play at all this year. Maybe he plays in the future. Maybe he doesn't. There have been mixed reports on that. But there may not have been another team in the National Football League in need of a linebacker that would have pulled the trigger on Jalen Smith there instead of Miles Jack when they had the opportunity. Now, keeping in mind this is round two of the draft, and the whole talk had been about the value of Miles Jack falling out of round one. Of course, the Jags then were the beneficiaries of trading up a couple of spots. Dallas took Smith at pick number 34. The Jags were sitting at 38, ultimately trading up to 36 to take Miles Jack. It's not a complete board. There are a few that people couldn't make out, and they're just written in as illegible. But there's only one third rounder and two fourth round grades that the Cowboys had that were illegible. I don't see Yannick Ngakoue. I don't see Sheldon Day on this draft board at all. Here's the guys they had graded as first round picks: Ezekiel Elliott, Ramsey, Laremy Tunsil, Joey Bosa, Jalen Smith, Miles Jack, Carson Wentz, who went second, Leonard Floyd, the outside linebacker out of Georgia, went to the Bears right around the ninth pick, was he? Something like that. Jared Goff, who went number one overall, Sheldon Rankins, who went 12th overall to the New Orleans Saints, Shaq Lawson, who was the 19th pick in the first round, Paxton Lynch, third quarterback, he went 26th overall. They did have him graded as a first rounder, albeit the third quarterback. Vernon Hargraves, who went 11th, Eli Apple, who went 10th, DeForest Buckner and Ronnie Stanley went 7th and 6th. So those were the players that the Cowboys ranked as first-round graded players in their draft. Doesn't mean they're right, doesn't mean they're wrong. It's just interesting to see their perspective on it and see where some of these guys actually ended up going. For instance, Jack Conklin, who the Titans took, right, when they could have had Tunsil. After all the trading around, they still could have had Tunsil. The Cowboys graded him as a low second rounder. He went 8th overall to the Tennessee Titans. Let's hope that Jerry and Stephen Jones were more accurate in their grading. What do you got for me, Tyler? I don't know.
We plugged the Bortles nugget from footballperspective.com.
Give me a Bortles nugget.
We didn't want to forget. I thought this was interesting. We were talking about this in the pre-show meeting. In Bortles' 21 losses in his career, he averages 23 of 38 for 262, 1.5 touchdowns, and 1.3 picks. Not too bad. 260 yards is a lot in losses.
Well, then isn't 260 yards is right around a 4,000-yard passer, right? That's 250 a game would make you a 4,000-yard passer.
But then you go to Blake's 8 wins in his career. He averages way less attempts and completions, 18 of 32, compare that to 23 of 38 in losses. 18 of 32 averaging in wins, just 200 yards. So that's 60 less yards. 1.6 touchdowns and 0.8 interceptions, so a half pick less he averages in wins as opposed to losses, which makes sense. He's turning over the ball.
Right, that seems to be the key stat there, is that when he's protecting the football, the Jags have a much higher success rate.
And this was the eye-opening one that me and you were just like, wow, I mean, it makes sense. But Blake Bortles is 5-5 when throwing for less than 200 yards, 3-6 when throwing between 200 and 274, and 0-10 when throwing for over 275. 0-10 in Blake Bortles' career when he throws for over 275.
Right, at which it would seem to indicate, you know, when you're throwing a lot because you're behind, or the game, you know, you haven't salted games away, right? And then therefore you're passing yardage totals, more opportunities are there for you to pile up. I wonder whether it's that threshold or 300 yards, the ratio of wins by quarterbacks throwing for 300 more yards. I would think that, I wouldn't put it this way, it wouldn't surprise me if there were more losing games where quarterbacks threw for 300 yards because of that, what we're talking about. You're behind, you're throwing the entire second half, whatever the case may be. But there's so many high-end quarterbacks out there that routinely just seemingly throw for 300 every week. They don't, but they seem like they do. And that win a lot of football games. So hopefully that Blake's winning record this year, or is a winning record. His record will be a winning record. Hopefully he wins 10 games. I don't really care if they have to do it by throwing the ball a lot, or they're balanced, or they become a run-heavy team. I don't think anybody's going to care in the end, as long as they're consistently successful at whatever they do. We can delve into that a little bit more as the week goes on. Again, Donovan Darius in studio with us tomorrow. Take a look at the fan feedback spotlight today, Tyler, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, where we asked who are the three most indispensable players outside of Blake Bortles for 2016 on the Jaguars. What did Twitter have to say?
Irish Jaguar says Allen Robinson, Tayshaun Gibson, and Dante Fowler.
I think that might be mine
Exact trio.
But I'm vacillating between Allen Robinson and Julius Thomas probably on offense because there's not as much behind Julius
Thomas.
If you
lose Julius, that becomes a pretty thin tight end group. Who's after? Who's a good pass catching threat besides? I mean, Mercedes isn't really.
I think you'd throw a lot more three wide receiver sets out there. Throw a lot more to Rashad Green maybe in that scenario.
Absolutely. Johnny says Tashaun Gibson, Malik Jackson, and Brandon Linder. Shermanator 77, Fowler, Gibson, and Linder. Jimbo Radd, A-Rob, Telvin, and Linder, Jags and Goats. A-Rob, Beecham, and Paul Posluszny, the first vote for Paul I've seen all day. Louis Tavares says AR-15, Allen Hurns, and TJ Yeldon. Haven't seen one for TJ as well, so there's one for TJ. Isaiah Fee says Allen Robinson, Fowler, and Malik Jackson. Cobalt Blue says Gibson, Ivory, and Julius Thomas. So we're getting a lot of offensive players. Doesn't seem like we're getting too much on the defensive side besides either Dante or Tashaun Gibson.
I think both of those guys are truly indispensable. Right. If you want to be as good as you can be, I think they can withstand. And that's what it comes down to. Where can you withstand injuries? Where can you withstand guys being out for a period of time? And I think they're not well suited to do that at free safety. They are not well suited to do that at pass rush. Does that put a lot of pressure on a guy who's unproven and unseen? Absolutely. But that's life in the big city. You get picked third overall. You're going to have some pressure on you. And Dante Fowler Jr., based on his attitude, looks like he is ready to roll in that department. Dalton, these are on Facebook. How about a shiny three new defensive newcomers, Ramsey, Jack, and Fowler? How can you say that, Dalton? You haven't seen them play a down. I mean, thinking back to the person who said that earlier, because I said Dante Fowler, and they said, it's ridiculous. I make no gosh dang since. They meant since, but they said since. Well, that's like saying, okay, that you can't think then that Jalen Ramsey is more indispensable than Dwayne Grotz because we haven't seen Jalen Ramsey play in the NFL yet. And Dwayne Grotz has, and he has experience. I mean, that makes zero sense to me. You have to project in life. Aaron went with Can, Parnell, and Linder. There's just not enough depth on the offensive line. He's just going with the entire right side of the line. Matt went with Robinson, Hurns, and Julius Thomas. Receivers are the most proven, yet with little depth after those three. I would disagree. I would say, you know, again, you've seen rankings this all season of NFL people thinking they have a top five overall pass-catching group, right? So if you lose one of those guys, I think you could withstand that for a stretch. Rashad Green, Marquise Lee would have to be healthy. I'm not saying you can count on that, but the potential is there on the roster. I think better quality depth at that position group. Ramsey, Gibson, and Robinson, Gibson, Fowler, and Malik Jackson. A lot of votes for Linder, Linder, Parnell, and Gibson. So, look, we're all pulling from a similar pool. But for me, Tayshaun Gibson, Dante Fowler Jr., and I'll go with Julius Thomas just because of the lack of relative depth at the position, although he is that close with Allen Robinson as far as I see. It's hard to say that a guy who scored 14 touchdowns and had 1,400 yards is not indispensable to your team. You're only Pro Bowler. So I'm not trying to slight him. I'm just thinking that that position group is a little stronger overall. That does it for us today, regardless here on Jaguars Today. Coming up, the Midday Chalk. Thanks to Barry Milligan for joining me for most of the show today. Thanks to all of you out there for your texts, tweets, phone calls, and what have you. Donovan Darius in studio with us tomorrow, and plenty more on the Jags offseason as we're that much closer to the start of training camp next Friday. We'll be out there broadcasting live out at the Florida Blue practice fields as the Jags are on the field for the first time for training camp. It's all coming up for Tyler Devitt, for Joe Fortunato, for Fat Tony. He's out on vacation all week long. Lest you forget. Thanks again to Barry Milligan. I'm Mike Dempsey signing off for Jaguars Today. Midday Chalk straight ahead on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
You guys have a good day. Peace.